The FBI in peace and war. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, $25,000 bond.
All right, thank you, sir.
Mr. Farrell, I've just come from the United States Commissioner's office. He said you refused counsel when you were arraigned before him this morning. Violation of the espionage laws is a major charge. I don't have to tell you that. And if Barry Galvin should fail to pull through, you're sure you don't want to change your mind about retaining counsel?
I'm sure.
Why?
I have my reasons.
I looked over your record in the Commissioner's office. It's an excellent record, Mr. Farrell. Unless there's a compelling reason, a man of your background doesn't change overnight.
Mr. Stevens...
And beyond your record, there was the interview with Agent Reynolds at your office. No man doesn't ask for an interview with the FBI.
Well, Mr. Stevens, I believe I'm within my rights in not caring to discuss this.
You are, but you're being held in $25,000 bond. You know what that means. No visitors except an attorney. I'd hope you might be willing to help yourself since you flatly refused counsel. Excuse me. Steven speaking. Yes, Dave. Huh? I see. Yes, I'll tell him. Mr. Farrell.
Yes?
That was Agent Reynolds. Your wife.
I don't want Eileen brought into this. You have no right to...
Your wife just made a complete and voluntary statement assuming full guilt. Her statement exonerates you from any connection with the classified documents in question, as well as your supposed part in the shooting. You want to tell me about it now?
They won't put her away, will they? I mean, if there were mitigating circumstances...
Well, that's not for me to decide, Mr. Farrell.
No, of course not. It's just... Well, it wasn't Eileen's fault. Not really. And as for the shooting...
Why don't you tell me what you know from the beginning?
All right.
Would you like a cigarette?
Yes, I would.
Here you are.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. It wasn't her fault. If anything, I was to blame, but you can make your own judgments. All I know is that if I hadn't been so busy at the office, I would have had more time with Eileen. And she wouldn't have had time for a man like Barry Galvin.
One of these days, that husband of yours may get curious about what happens with you while he's busy at the office. What then?
Paul isn't the type to get curious.
Oh? Trusts you, eh?
Implicitly. But if he ever did get curious, all I do is ask for a divorce.
You, haven't mentioned anything like that yet.
You told me not to.
Of course.
When, Barry?
When what?
Do I mention it?
Well... I've been thinking about that very thing, Eileen. Say, that glass looks kind of lonely.
Oh, just a short one.
I've been thinking about us most carefully, and I've come to the conclusion... Eileen.
Yes?
When two people are as close as we are, they shouldn't have secrets from one another, should they?
Of course they shouldn't. What is it, Barry? Tell me.
I need money, Eileen. A great deal of money, and I need it now.
But I thought...
I know. But I haven't been doing so well with my investments lately, and a couple of big deals have fallen through.
Darling, I don't care about money. Did I ever?
No, no, of course not.
For goodness sake, Barry, my husband works for the government. You know the kind of salary he makes.
I know, Eileen. I know how you feel, but I just couldn't ask the future Mrs. Barry Calvin to make a big move like this unless I could at least... Eileen... How much do I mean to you?
You know how much, darling.
Enough to do something for me without asking why?
Ask me, that's all.
Eileen, do you know what work your husband does for the government?
No. That is not exactly. Paul never discusses business with me.
Uh-huh. He, brings things home to work on, doesn't he?
Oh, yes, almost every weekend. Darling,
Eileen, you want to help me? You really do?
Yes, darling, I just said...
All right. That's all I wanted to know. I had to find out if you really wanted me, really needed me. Because I need you, Eileen. I need you more than you will ever know.
Memo to Reynolds, confidential. Request from Defense Department granted by Director. Your instructions are to confer with Mr. Paul Farrell at once. Report back to me. Dinah Stevens.
You there, boy. Sit up. Look spry. Zip lively. This is your great-grandpa. And then some. My name? I've been called Johnny Reb, and I've been called Billy Yank. I'm a soldier. Civil War. Well, what you want to know about soldiering? Oh, yes, sir. We was the first to use observation from the air. There was no end of things we didn't start or try out for the first time in our war. At the beginning of the war, Congress authorized Thaddeus Lowe to create us an aeronautic service. So, he built 5 balloons, which was used first in the Peninsular Campaign by McClellan. And the fact is, old Thaddeus Lowe was the first one to take photographs from a balloon. Yeah. Anyhow, they'd go on up right over the enemy lines and look down on them with long spyglasses. There wasn't no danger from gunfire since neither the muskets nor the artillery fire could reach them. But landing the blamed balloon was sure hazardous. They'd bounce down hard and the observers would get themselves all tangled in the poles of the balloon, like a witch you never seen. Well, but they got the job done, even if they did sometimes look as if they was going to fly right on up to the moon. But now, you boy, you don't have to depend on balloons, I know. You got yourself all kinds of people and machines to do your observing for you and do it a heap better. There's helicopters and other such like spotter aircraft for which you can thank your lucky stars and stripes. Believe you me, son, it takes more than just men and guns and generals to make you an army. It takes some poor devil like old Thad Lowe risking his neck in some crazy balloon some 100 years ago. And then it takes long, hard training to give you the kind of darn good observing you've got today. Danged if it don't.
Of course, you have no actual evidence that anyone has been examining the documents, have you, Mr. Farrell?
No direct evidence, no.
And none of the papers has ever been missing?
No.
Still, you feel...
Mr. Reynolds, look at it this way. The papers we're talking about are classified material. In the vernacular, top secret. I'm not only careful when handling material of that classification, I'm absolutely exact.
Uh-huh. For instance?
Well, for instance, each paper is in a specific manila folder and placed in definite order. I check this, then I check it again. Yet twice during the past month, I've found papers and folders interchanged, or at any rate, arranged differently than when I placed them there.
I understand.
Now, one thing I'm certain, I didn't rearrange them.
All right.
Now, I don't think I'm being an alarmist. You recognize the implications behind my suspicion. If I weren't fairly certain...
You don't have to convince me, Mr. Fowle. Less evidence than yours has produced incredible results. Let me ask you this. Who in this office, or for that matter, who on this floor, would have had ordinary access to your briefcase?
Ordinary? No one. Unusual access? Oh, my secretary, the filing clerks, my assistant, Joe Dixon.
No special feelings about any of that?
I'd trust each and every one of them as highly as I would myself.
Uh-huh. You bring work home with you, Mr. Fowle?
On weekends, yes, I do. Occasionally other times, but mostly weekends.
This past month?
Yes.
Married, aren't you?
I am.
Happily? I don't mean to pry.
Well, it's all right. Yes, quite happily.
The reason I ask, security had you conceal the nature of your work, even from your wife. This interview cancels that order. For her safety, it's now necessary for her to know. Do you have a gun in the house, Mr. Fowle?
No, I don't. You don't really...
Mr. Fowle?
Yes?
I'm not being an alarmist either. But I don't have to talk circles with you. You're well aware of the situation. I'll see that you have a gun and permit for it. One more thing.
Yes?
This sooner you tell your wife about this, the better.
I'll tell her tonight. Anything more?
No, that's all for now, Mr. Farrell. There may be something more later.
And after my interview with Agent Reynolds, I tried to continue working, but the situation was too disturbing for me to concentrate. I left the office and went home to tell Eileen about it, as he suggested. But there was a note on the night table saying she was spending the evening with friends. This had been happening with increasing regularity over the recent weeks, and somehow that was disturbing, too. Eileen?
Oh, sorry, Paul. I didn't mean to wake you.
I wasn't asleep.
Oh. Just get home yourself?
No, I quit earlier today. I didn't know you were going out tonight.
Well, Mary needed a fourth at bridge. If I'd known you weren't staying at the office.
Well, I didn't know until the last minute myself. Who was there?
Mary? You know, people.
Barry Calvin?
Yes, Barry was there. As a matter of fact, he brought me home.
Well, that was nice of him.
Yes, I thought so.
Eileen, what's the matter?
Something the matter?
I think there is.
Imagination, Paul.
No. We've been growing apart lately. It's my fault, I guess. I made the office more important than our home. And I couldn't even tell you why.
Paul.
But anyway, that's changed. Now I can tell you. If something is the matter, maybe it will help. And by the time I'd finished telling her, Eileen was really shocked. I'd expected a reaction from her, but nothing so severe. I reassured her as best I could. I told her the whole thing might be a false alarm. I told her about the gun in our living room desk, but nothing would come. And, of course, I didn't know why. I didn't know what a night of torment she went through, waiting for the morning and the truth.
The truth? Your husband must be an eloquent speaker. Have you got me this way? Paul does speak well, doesn't he?
I didn't ask you here to discuss Paul's vocal abilities, Barry.
Well, I'm quite sure you didn't.
How much truth is there in what he said?
Apparently, you seem to think there's a good deal.
Answer my question.
Eileen, when you went along with our arrangement, you knew that there might be complications, didn't you?
I went along because I thought those papers were harmless, because you said you needed my help. I think I know why now.
You do?
You lied to me all along. You only made love to me so you could use them.
Use you? That has such an ugly sound, Eileen. You have my word. Every moment with you was a pleasure.
Your word.
Love and war, my dear, all's fair. Well?
You admit it. You really are a...
foreign agent?
You are, aren't you?
I'm sorry. But you had to find out sooner or later.
What a fool I've been. What a stupid, stupid fool.
Oh, easy now. Don't sell yourself short. And like I say, it was fun.
Louse! Crawling, squirming louse!
I wouldn't do that again if I were you. And keep your voice down. What do you think you're doing?
What does it look like? I'm calling Paul and filling him in.
I don't think that's very wise.
Oh, I don't imagine you do.
Don't go off the deep end, Eileen. Think. Just think a minute.
You know me, Barry. I don't think. That's my trouble. Hello. Mr. Paul Farrell, please. Thank you.
You're being young, Eileen. Don't be young. You don't want Paul to know what you've done.
That's where you're wrong. I do want him to know. He said those documents in the wrong hands.
Documents? Who's talking about documents?
What?
I'm talking about personal things, darling. Things I'm sure you wouldn't want anyone to know, much less your husband. Things I'd really be most reluctant to tell him.
You?
No, keep flexible, Eileen. An open mind. Thinking young is unbecoming at
Paul,
your age.
It's me. It's Eileen. Paul. Paul, hold on. Someone wants to tell you something.
Eileen.
Here's the phone. Go on, tell him. Go on, go on, tell him.
Paul, Barry Calvin, Eileen's feeling silly today. She's had one or two drinks.
Paul, listen. No, Barry. Come on, Paul. No, don't ask questions. Do what I say. Important. Please, please come right away.
And all I knew was that Eileen asked me to come home right away. There'd been an urgency in her voice that should have prepared me for something unusual, but I was hardly prepared to hear what I did. Barry Calvin had warned Eileen how far he would go, and he carried out his ugly threat with little qualification.
Are you through?
All through? Unless perhaps your wife cares to add refinement.
Paul.
Be quiet, Eileen.
I'm so sorry.
Please, let me handle this. Calvin, you're a fortunate man. If this were the movies, I'd have knocked you down long ago.
I take regret we're grown-up people. Believe me, I didn't want it this way. I'd never have opened my mouth if Eileen hadn't made an issue. I take for granted you wouldn't do anything foolish.
Do you also take for granted just what I would do?
I think I do, yes. You're not going to do a thing.
I'm going to call the police, Calvin.
No, you won't do that.
I won't.
Your wife wouldn't like it. After all, someone might get careless and tell the police what I've just told you. That would make a real juicy headline now, wouldn't it?
That wouldn't turn false.
And someone might also tell them how you and Eileen had been conspiring all this time against your country.
Eileen and me?
Yes. I don't believe Eileen would want that to happen. Perhaps the other, but not that.
No, you wouldn't try.
I'm only trying to help you, dear. I certainly don't want your husband mixed up in this ugly mess just because his manly pride's been injured. You see your position, don't you, Paul?
Yes, I see.
And to avoid complications, all you have to do is to act sensible.
How sensible?
Well,
all I have to do is forget this incident and let you walk out of here, is that it?
My dear Paul, I could have walked out long before you arrived. No, that's not it. There's a little something more.
For instance?
Paul, you're a bright young man, an intellectual, the spark plug of the nation. Surely you can add two and two and tell me the right answer.
I thought Eileen provided you with the papers you wanted.
She did. And more. However...
Yes?
However, there are certain essential papers still to be seen to, shall we say, complete the picture. In my pocket, there's a camera. 5 minutes with the essential papers, and I'm satisfied. We part amicably and no one... I said something amusing?
Yes, you did. Something very amusing. That's the trouble with you boys. Your conceit gets in your way and trips you up every time.
You prefer the alternative?
There really isn't any choice.
Good old national loyalty, huh? That Boy Scout American attitude always gives me a laugh.
Now, laugh hearty, then. Your number is coming up any minute.
Don't fuss me, Paul. I don't like it.
We have a good old national saying, Calvin. If you don't like it, lump it.
You underestimate me. You always have.
No, on the contrary, I overestimated you. I had no idea what a filthy, low, miserable, sneaking cheat you were.
Your husband doesn't know how to speak. You should teach him discretion, Eileen. We know who the expert is when it comes to sneaking cheats, don't we? The memory of those evenings while he was
back
in the office. Blind man like you, Paul. What do you know? Ideals, big talk, and no action. That's you and your kind all the time. Talk and ideals. Why, your wife... No, I'm through catering to this nitwit. Do I have to cajole when I can order? I want those papers, Paul. You have them. I want them now. You do have a choice, whether you think so or not. You can hand them to me, or pick up the phone and drop before you say operator.
Barry?
Yes, it's a gun. 45 automatic with silencer. Live and let live was always my creed, Eileen. But your big, brave husband is asking for trouble. So let him have his choice. Hand me the papers, or pick up the phone.
Paul!
Stay out of this, Eileen.
No, I won't. The papers you want are in his desk.
Eileen.
I'm sorry, Paul. I don't care about moving. I won't let you.
The papers are in his desk?
Yes.
Get them.
Eileen.
I stay where you are, Paul.
Put that gun down or I'll ram it down your throat.
I warn you, you drive me too far. You have it, Eileen?
Yes. I have it.
You rotten, no good.
All right, Paul. I've taken enough from you.
Barry?
Eileen. Listen. There's no time. Now, listen. I'm going to call for an ambulance. Do you understand? Now, the police will come. You weren't here. Have you got that? I'll explain everything. Oh, don't, darling. Don't. Everything will be all right. Please, please, don't cry, Eileen. It's all behind you now. You'll see. Everything will be all right.
is your land. This land is my land. This land was made for you and me.
One of the world's great men was born at Sinking Spring Farm near the Big South Fork of Nolan Creek, Abraham Lincoln. One of America's favorite songs was written about Bardstown, my old Kentucky home. Much of the world's best bourbon is distilled in Frankfort, or Frank's Ford, as it was originally named. One of America's cleverest men hailed from Paducah, Irvin S. Cobb. Gilbertsville is the site of the largest of the TVA dams, and Fort Knox houses all of the nation's gold bullion. All of this greatness had a common spawning ground, the Bluegrass State, where the words thereof probably mean more than anywhere else, Kentucky. But the mountaineer is at least as much a part of this state as man of war, and his struggle to survive, inherited from his father and his grandfather, is in the names he gives to the hollows where he lives. Lonesome and troublesome and peevish. The stick-to-itiveness of men like this has made Kentucky a state famous for thoroughbreds of all kinds, and a state which continues to stand united.
Kalman Bartok, alias Barry Calvin, recovered from the gunshot wound inflicted by Eileen Farrell, and on his release from hospitalization, was deported from this country under the Subversives Act. Mrs. Farrell, in spite of her husband's vigorous efforts in her behalf, was tried as an accessory, convicted as charged, and sentenced to 2 years in women's prison. As for Paul Farrell himself, substantiation of his wife's statement by your FBI provided his immediate release from $25,000 bond. In tonight's story, Elsbeth Eric played the part of Eileen Farrell, Les Damon was Paul Farrell, and Bill Johnstone was Barry Calvin. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Jack Anson Fink. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War, and the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.